Welcome to the Richard Serrett Show. We're going to rip the mask off Canada's descent into tyranny. The Royal Bank of Canada has debanked constitutional lawyer Eva Chipiuk for defending the Freedom Convoy. Her crime? Standing for liberty. Is this a bank or a government enforcer? Tamara Leach and Chris Barber face years in prison for mischief while echo zealots walk free. Taxes are crushing families and Christian rocker Sean Foyt is banned for his faith. Canada's at a crossroads. Freedom or tyranny? The Richard Serrett Show, off and running for Friday, July the 25th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. Facta, non verba.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
Stop repeating, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something. You'll see the whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will atone.
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption, this is The Richard Serrett Show.
Welcome back to The Richard Serrett Show. The Royal Bank of Canada has plunged a dagger into the soul of Canadian liberty, and the blade is still twisting. They've debanked Eva Chipiuk, a constitutional lawyer whose only transgression was her fearless defense of the Freedom Convoy, a movement that dared to challenge a government bloated with hubris and control. This isn't just a bank closing an account. It's a brazen assault on free thought, a warning shot that our financial institutions, once the bedrock of our economic freedom, have morphed into enforcers of a vindictive, vengeful regime. When a bank can strip a citizen of their financial lifeline for their beliefs, we're not just on the wrong side of history, we're off the road, in the ditch, and sinking fast into the muck of tyranny. Eva Chipiuk, a woman of unyielding principle, received a letter from RBC, as cold as a prairie winter, informing her that her accounts would be terminated by August 18th, 2025. The excuse? Murky, risk-related concerns tied to a Bitcoin transaction that piqued their suspicion. They subjected her to a humiliating inquisition. Strange, demeaning questions as if she were a child caught with her hand in the cookie jar and issued a cryptic warning to be careful with crypto. Then, with the smugness of a bureaucrat wielding unchecked power, they slammed the door shut, citing federal regulations, but offering no evidence, no justification. This isn't banking, it's blacklisting, a modern-day pillory designed to shame and silence those who dare to think independently. Banks aren't like other businesses. They're not corner stores or coffee shops that can refuse service on a whim. In Canada, we have just five major banks, RBC, TD, Scotiabank, BMO, and CIBC, holding a stranglehold over our financial system. These aren't mere businesses. They're the arteries of our economy, the conduits through which every Canadian's livelihood flows. To be debanked is to be cut off from the lifeblood of modern society. No ability to pay bills, receive wages, or buy groceries. It's economic excommunication. And when one of these five giants decides to cast you out, your options are pitifully few. Unlike a retailer who might turn away a customer, banks hold a public trust, a sacred duty to serve without prejudice. They're federally regulated for a reason, bound by the Bank Act to act with fairness and transparency. Yet, RBC's actions spit in the face of that obligation, flouting Section 627.18.1, which permits account closures only for fraud, physical harm, harassment, or abuse, none of which apply to Chipiuk. Between 2018 and 2023, 837 accounts were shuttered without explanation, a betrayal of that trust on a staggering scale. This travesty doesn't stand alone. It's woven into the broader tapestry of the Freedom Convoy's persecution, where Tamara Leach and Chris Barber face 7 and 8 years in prison for, get this, mischief. mischief. A charge so absurdly disproportionate, it's like sentencing someone to life for jaywalking. The provincial crown, bloated with self-righteous zeal, is swinging the law like a sledgehammer to crush a movement that exposed the fragility of their authority. And now, Chipyuk, their legal advocate, is cast into financial exile by RBC. Debanked, not for any crime, but for her courage. Coincidence? Hardly. This is a choreographed vendetta, a duet of retribution sung by a government and its banking allies, both marching in lockstep to the drumbeat of control. Let's rewind to 2022 when the Liberal government, under then Deputy Prime Minister and Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland, unleashed an unprecedented assault on Canadian citizens, invoking the Emergencies Act, later ruled unnecessary and unlawful by a federal judge. They froze the bank accounts of Freedom Convoy supporters. Not just organizers, mind you, but everyday Canadians, truckers, farmers, small business owners, who dared to protest against mandates that choked their livelihoods. Freeland, with the icy certitude of a technocrat, declared these seizures as incentive to end the protests. An incentive? As if freezing the life savings of ordinary people is a casual nudge, not a grotesque abuse of power. In total, $7.8 million in assets held in 267 bank accounts and 170 Bitcoin wallets were seized, according to Blacklocks. These weren't terrorists or mobsters. These were people who believed in their charter-given right to dissent. The world watched, jaws agape, as Canada, a nation once hailed as a paragon of Western democracy, descended into this authoritarian abyss. From London to Washington, headlines screamed of a country turning its financial system into a weapon against its own people. It was a stain on our national honor, a moment of profound embarrassment that echoed the economic purges of history's darkest regimes. When Stalin's Soviet Union or apartheid South Africa wanted to break their opponents, they didn't just jail them. They choked off their access to money, rendering them ghosts in their own societies. Canada, in 2022, joined that grim lineage, and the shame still lingers. The Canadian Bankers Association admitted that a frozen account leaves a permanent scar, a financial mark of Cain that brands you for life. This isn't justice, it's vengeance, cloaked in the sterile language of compliance. The Emergencies Act was revoked after 9 days, but the damage was done. The RCMP's own Project Natterjack report, a 92-page mea culpa, admitted that the invocation shattered public trust. It was highly politicized, they confessed, and the freezing of accounts, while the RCMP tried to dodge blame, pointed fingers at the banks. It was a coordinated effort. Internal emails uncovered by Blacklocks reveals the government's complicity. Deputy Finance Minister Michael Sabia scrambled to shield banks from public fury, directing people to local law enforcement to unfreeze accounts, as if that absolved the likes of RBC. Freeland herself, in testimony to the Public Order Emergency Commission, doubled down, calling the seizures a necessary tool. Necessary. For what? To crush a peaceful protest that dared to challenge your government's overreach? This is where the philosophical rot sets in. John Locke, the father of liberalism, argued that property is the cornerstone of freedom, the fruit of our labor that no state or institution can justly seize. Yet, RBC, in concert with a government that's lost its moral bearings, is doing exactly that, stripping Canadians of their economic agency for daring to question the narrative. Banks aren't just businesses. They're gatekeepers of our social contract, entrusted with safeguarding our ability to function in a modern economy. When they deny services based on political beliefs, they're not just refusing a customer, they're dismantling the very foundation of a free society. In Canada, with only 5 major banks, this power is concentrated to a dangerous degree. If RBC can debank Eva Chipyuk, what's stopping them or TD or Scotiabank from coming for you, for me, for anyone who steps out of line? History's a relentless teacher. The rebels of 1837 fought for accountable government, risking everything to demand a system that served the people, not the elite. The soldiers at Vimy Ridge spilled their blood for a free world, not one where banks play judge and jury. Yet today, RBC and its ilk are trampling that legacy, acting as enforcers for a government that sees dissent as a disease to be eradicated. The Freedom Convoy wasn't a rebellion. It was a plea for reason, a demand that our charter be respected. Yet Leach and Barber face prison terms that would make a dictator blush, and Chipyuk faces financial banishment. This is a pattern, a tapestry of tyranny woven by a government and its banking allies, both careening off the road of history and into the ditch of despotism. Eva Chipiuk isn't backing down. She's opened an account with Bow Valley Credit Union and is exploring legal options, a lone warrior facing a Goliath clad in Bay Street's finest. But this isn't just her fight, it's ours. Because if a constitutional lawyer can be unbanked for her beliefs, no one is safe. The banks are watching, and they're not your allies. They're a vanguard of a government that's turned vindictive, vengeful, and tyrannical. A government that would rather crush its people than answer their questions. RBC and their cohorts aren't just in the ditch. They're digging it deeper, piling the dirt on the grave of our freedoms. Here's the warning, Canada. Our banks have become the iron vault of tyranny, locking away the rights we hold dear. They're in lockstep with a government that's not just on the wrong side of history. It's lost in the wilderness, dragging us into a future where dissent is a death sentence. We have to demand transparency, accountability, and an end to this economic witch hunt. Stand with Eva Chipiuk, with Tamara Leach and Chris Barber, not because they're heroes, though they are, but because they're us. They're the sentinel sounding the alarm, and the hour is late. If we don't act, we'll wake to a Canada where freedom is a memory, where the banks and the state hold the key to our lives, and the door is bolted shut. That's not a Canada I recognize, and it's not one I'll accept.
Aktientipps kann jeder. Doch wie liegen die wirklich Großen an? Im Podcast That's Smart Money zeigen euch Investmentprofis, wie zum Beispiel Family Offices und Private Equity Experten Milliarden managen. Christian Schneider-Sickert und Florian Adomeit öffnen die Türen zu exklusiven Strategien und Deals. Jetzt reinhören, ab sofort auf Spotify.
News not in the news.
Welcome back to the Richard Serrett Show. We are standing at the edge of a precipice, staring into a Canada that's starting to look a lot less like the land of liberty we cherish and more like a dystopian nightmare where dissent is crushed, faith is silenced, and your hard-earned money is siphoned off to feed a bloated, unaccountable state. I've got three stories today, each a jagged shard of the same shattered dream, and they expose a nation where the courts, the government, and even our cultural gatekeepers are colluding to choke the life out of freedom. This isn't just news, it's a clarion call, a flare shot into the darkening sky of our liberties. So let's dive in, because the truth is under attack and it's time to fight back with everything we've got. First, let's talk about the Freedom Convoy, where Tamara Leach and Chris Barber, two ordinary Canadians turned folk heroes, are being dragged through the longest, most expensive mischief trial in our nation's history. Candace Malcolm, the host of Juno News, recently sat down with John Carpe, president of the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms, to unpack this travesty. Leach and Barber were found guilty of one count of mischief for their roles in the 2022 Freedom Convoy protest, a peaceful uprising against draconian COVID mandates. Barber's got an extra charge, counseling others to disobey a court order, piled on for good measure. The Crown is gunning for 7 years in prison for Leach and 8 for Barber. 7 and 8 years. For what? The judge ruled they violated Section 430 of the Criminal Code by obstructing or interfering with Ottawa residents' use of property. Streets were clogged, parkades were blocked. Life was inconvenient for a few weeks. Annoying, sure. Worth nearly a decade behind bars? That's not justice, it's a vendetta. A political lynching dressed up in judicial robes. John Carpe called the ruling debatable. And he's being polite. Some Ottawa residents couldn't drive their cars as easily. Boo-hoo. Compare that to the eco-zealots who've blocked pipelines and freeways, or the 2021 Canada Day mob that toppled Queen Victoria's statue in Manitoba while police stood by. No charges, no prison terms, just Trudeau offering to sit down with them. Candace Malcolm nailed it. Canada's got a two-tiered justice system where left-wing causes get a free pass, but a working-class protest against government overreach? That's a crime against the state. The Freedom Convoy wasn't a riot. It was a cry from truckers, farmers, and everyday Canadians fed up with lockdowns, vaccine mandates, and rules we now know were often arbitrary, unscientific, and, as the Justice Center proved, unconstitutional. The Emergencies Act, invoked to crush the convoy, was ruled unnecessary and unlawful by a federal judge in 2024, yet the punishment rolls on. Here's the kicker. The Trudeau government set the narrative before the first truck hit Ottawa. the Public Order Emergencies Commission revealed that Trudeau's cabinet decided to paint the convoy as racist, white supremacist, and neo-Nazi, labels that stuck like tar thanks to a complicit government-funded media. Politicians fed these lies to reporters who fed them back, creating a vicious propaganda loop that scared Ottawa residents not with reality, but with fiction. Carpe highlighted a chilling trend. Judges are now writing this media narrative into their rulings, citing CBC headlines as if they're evidence. Before 2020, this would have been unthinkable. Courts focused on facts, not headlines. But today, the judiciary's drinking the same Kool-Aid as the CBC, turning justice into a tool of ideology. The sentencing's been delayed again, this time to October, proving what we've long suspected. In the Canadian judicial system, the process is the punishment. This trial is a disgrace, a stain on Canada's legacy as a beacon of freedom. The Freedom Convoy was the voice of the forgotten, people who lost jobs, businesses, and dignity to mandates that even the WHO later admitted were overblown. To slap 7 and 8 years on Leach and Barber for mischief while letting statue topplers and pipeline blockers walk free is proof of a justice system that's not blind, but blatantly biased. This isn't about law, it's about power. The Trudeau government, now led by Mark Carney's polished technocracy, wants to send a message. Question us, and we'll ruin you. The philosophical rot here is profound. John Locke warned that a government that tramples individual rights forfeits its legitimacy by weaponizing the courts. Ottawa's doing just that, eroding the social contract that binds us. Historically, show trials, like those of Stalin's purges or Mao's Cultural Revolution, serve to silence dissent and scare the masses. Canada's not there yet, but we're on the slope, and it's slippery. If this verdict stands, it's open season on free speech, a green light for the state to crush anyone who dares to disagree. We have to stand with Leach and Barber, not just for them, but for the right to protest, to speak, to exist as free Canadians. Next, the Fraser Institute's 2025 Canadian Consumer Tax Index dropped a bombshell that should make every Canadian's blood boil. The average family, earning $114,289 last year, forked over $48,306 in taxes, 42.3% of their income, more than they spend on food, housing, and clothes combined. That's right. Taxes are now your biggest household expense, outstripping the essentials that keep your family fed and sheltered. In 1961, taxes took 33.5% of income, while necessities took 56.5%. Today, those numbers have flipped, with taxes growing 2,784% since then, dwarfing inflation's 925% rise. Income taxes alone hit $15,085, followed by $10,319 in payroll and health taxes, $6,812 in sales taxes, and a laundry list of property, fuel, carbon, and excise levies. Meanwhile, the federal bureaucracy is swollen to a record 445,000 employees, a black hole sucking up your money to fund paper pushers and corporate handouts. The Montreal Economic Institute found 72% of Canadians say taxes are crushing their quality of life, and a separate study shows we pay 70% more in income taxes than Americans, even compared to their highest tax states. The top 20% of families shoulder nearly 60% of the tax burden. Yet Prime Minister Mark Carney, former Brookfield Asset Management titan, accused of helping dodge $5.3 billion in Canadian taxes, offers a measly one-point cut to the lowest federal bracket, saving you about $400 a year. Pocket change while Ottawa feasts. The Canadian Taxpayers Federation's Franco Terrazano put it bluntly, "We're overtaxed because our governments waste too much." And waste they do, with a bureaucracy so bloated it's practically a caricature of inefficiency. This is theft, plain and simple, a violation of the principle that your labor belongs to you, not the state. John Stuart Mill argued that excessive taxation is a form of tyranny, stripping individuals of their autonomy. In Canada, we're living that nightmare, where nearly half your income vanishes into the maw of a government that can't stop spending. The Fraser Institute's numbers aren't just stats. They're a death knell for the Canadian dream. Home ownership, financial security, a future for your kids. While families struggle to buy groceries, Ottawa's hiring more bureaucrats and funneling billions to crony capitalists like Carney's old pals at Brookfield. This isn't governance, it's predation, a system designed to keep you broke and compliant. Historically, high taxes sparked revolutions. the American colonies in 1776, the French in 1789, because people knew their labor wasn't the king's to take. Today, we're serfs in a digital feudal state, and Carney's token tax cut is a cruel joke. We need a reckoning. Lower taxes, leaner government, or we'll be taxed into oblivion, a nation of workers with nothing to show for it but a receipt from Ottawa.
Keine zwei Trader sind gleich. Warum solltest du also eine starre Trading-Plattform wählen, die keine Flexibilität erlaubt? Kraken Pro ist für dich gemacht, nach deinen Vorstellungen. Drag, drop, vergrößere und erweitere jeden Pixel. Lege mit vorgefertigten Layouts los und verschiebe Module und Widgets, wie es dir passt. Besuche pro.kraken.com. Trading Crypto ohne Kompromisse. Keine Anlageberatung. Crypto Trading birgt ein Verlustrisiko. Paywood Europe Solutions Limited, tätig als Kraken, ist durch die Central Bank of Ireland autorisiert.
Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App AOK Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App AOK Navida downloaden und loslegen. AOK Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Finally, let's talk about Sean Foyt, the Christian rocker whose Revive and 25 tour is being hunted like a heretic in a witch trial. Parks Canada yanked his permit for a concert at York Redoubt near Halifax, citing safety and security concerns after locals and Halifax Pride groups complained Foyt, whose Let Us Worship movement rose against COVID lockdowns, moved the show to a rural church in Shubenacadie. But the pattern's clear. Charlottetown, Moncton, Quebec City, and Gatineau have all canceled his permits, blaming public safety or code violations. Foyt's crime? Professing Christian values in a country increasingly hostile to faith. He's dead right. If he'd shown up in drag, waving a pride flag, he'd be celebrated. But lead a worship event? That's a public safety risk. Foyt's tour, set to hit Ottawa, Toronto, and Western Canada, is a call to revive faith in a nation that's forgotten its roots. Canada was built on Christian values, freedom, charity, the dignity of the individual. And yet today those values are branded extremist, while the state bows to the mob. The National Capital Commission and city officials hide behind bureaucracy. But this is ideological warfare. Foyt's movement emerged during lockdowns when churches were shuttered while liquor stores stayed open. A stark reminder of where our priorities lie. His statements on X cuts deep. This is not the hour to cower. He's right. Christians gathered for Halifax Pride without issue, but a worship event draws protests and cancellations. This is anti-Christian bias, a chilling echo of Rome's persecution of early believers, where faith was a threat to the state's control. This is cultural erasure, a deliberate attack on the spiritual foundation of our nation. The West was built on Christianity's moral framework, equality before God, the sanctity of the individual, and yet, Canada's elites are dismantling that heritage, replacing it with a sterile, secular dogma that tolerates every belief except the one that shaped us. Historically, suppressing faith has been the prelude to tyranny. Look at the Soviet Union, where churches were razed, or Mao's China, where believers were jailed. Canada's not there yet, but banning worship events under flimsy pretenses is a step too far. Foyt's fight is ours. The right to pray, to gather, to believe without fear of the state's boot. The hypocrisy is galling. Pride parades are inclusive, but Christian worship is dangerous. This is a double standard that mocks our charter's promise of religious freedom. We have to push back, support Foyt's tour, and demand our right to faith in the public square. If we lose this, we lose the soul of Canada. These stories, Leach and Barber's trial, the tax burden, Foyt's cancellations, aren't isolated. They're symptoms of a deeper malaise. The state, the courts, the bureaucrats, they're all in lockstep, waging war on your freedom, your wallet, your faith. This is a Canada where increasingly dissent lands you in jail, work is taxed to death, and worship is banned. It's a Canada where the government picks winners and losers, where the law is a weapon, and where the spirit of Vimy Ridge, of the 1837 rebellion, is being smothered. Philosophically, this is a betrayal of Locke's social contract, of Mill's liberty, of the Christian ethos that taught us to love our neighbor. Historically, nations that silence dissent, tax their people into poverty, and suppress faith don't last. They fracture. They fall. My warning is stark. Wake up, Canada, or we'll lose this country. Not to invaders, but to our own apathy. The iron grip of tyranny is tightening, and it's not just Trudeau or Carney. It's a system that's forgotten who it serves. Stand with Leach, Barber, Foyt, and every Canadian who dares to say enough. Demand fair courts, lower taxes, and the right to worship. Because if we don't, we'll wake up to a Canada where freedom is a memory, where the state holds the key to our lives, and the door is bolted shut. That's not the Canada I love, and I'll be damned if I let it become the Canada we're left with. I'm Richard Serra. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you again real soon. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.